Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, mother! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricky on the board. SB Futures down 250. NASDAQ Futures down 47. We're down a little bit here today. We had some bank earnings this morning. JP Morgan came out. Good earnings are up $4. That's 2%. They're trading 216.85. TD Bank had a $3 billion fine from the Justice Department for letting a bunch of drug cartels money launder through the place. Not sure how they got caught, but they did. Anyway, $3 billion is a number, and they have to have limits on their growth for a while too. So, not a happy day for those guys. Of course, they probably made that much money. Who knows? And the shareholders will just pay it, and the rest of the guys will go onward. It appears, but they claim they're going after individuals. We'll see if that works. We have Professor Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, doing all right. Happy Friday to one and all.
Yeah, happy Friday. Interesting games we've had. Did you see? I'm such a knucklehead sometimes, maybe all the time. Did you see that catch in the San Diego game where the guy came in from left field and dove forward his mitt on the ground and the thing hit like his little pinky and rolled up into the glove and they kept doing the replay and it absolutely was a catch. I mean, I think it hit the mitt and never came out. But I'm looking at the guy's glove on TV and I'm going, my God, it's bigger than any softball mitt I've ever seen. So I'm thinking, are there rules to the size of the mitt? So, of course, I get on the trusty internet. If it's on the internet, it must be true, right? I'm with baseballrules.com here or something or other. Tell us the name of this thing. A Baseball Rules Academy. And the fielding gloves. Now, if I'm an umpire, I have to go out and check that mitt after the guy makes that catch. I'd just be that kind of a whatever.
So there is a size limit to them.
Huh? Oh yeah. Well, it used to be I think 12.5, but it's up to 13. So get a load of this. It's the glove shall not measure more than 13 inches from the tip of any one of the four fingers through the ball pocket to the bottom heel or edge or heel of the glove. The glove shall not measure more than 7.75 inches wide, measured from the inside seam at the base of first finger. We're not including the thumb in this, evidently. Along base of other fingers to the outside edge of the little finger edge of the glove. The space or area between the thumb and the first finger, what do you think that's called, Kevin? Mr. Baseball.
The thumb and the third finger?
No, it'd be the thumb and your first finger.
The thumb and the first finger? I don't know, the web?
The crotch.
The crotch of the, okay.
May be filled with leather webbing or backstop. The webbing may be constructed of two piles of standard leather to close the crotch area entirely, or may be constructed of a series of tunnels made of leather, or a series of panels of leather, or of lacing leather thongs. The webbing may not be constructed or wound or wrapped lacing to make it any kind of a trap where the ball can get trapped in there. So that's when you have your glove well worn in, it always seems like it can be, but it can't be such that the ball gets in there and like sticks. When webbing is made to cover the entire crotch area, the webbing can be constructed so as to be flexible. When constructed of a series of sections, they must be joined together. Anyway, the crotch opening shall measure not more than 4.5 inches at the top, nor more than 5.75 inches deep, and shall be 3.5 inches wide at the bottom. The opening should not be more than 4.5 inches at any point below its... In other words, there's all kinds of stuff here, and I'm going to say that guy's mitt didn't obey any of these rules.
Well, two things. First of all, I would imagine that is up to the opposing team to lodge a protest on it, to ask for it. much like Billy Martin asked for the pine tar being too high on, too far up on George Brett's bat many years ago. So that would be the first. And the second thing is now every time I see them gathering on the mound and covering their faces while they talk so that nobody picks up what they're saying, I'm only going to be thinking of them smelling crotches.
God. Well, you know, the funny part is when you go to the other the rules, it was the first baseman's mitt was the only one who was allowed to be 13 inches. The other ones had to be 12, but now I guess they're all 13. And I'm guessing some of these guys are easy 15. But that's just me.
Well, I suppose so, although I wonder why I'm sure you can get one custom made, but I wonder why a manufacturer would make a glove that doesn't fit the spec.
Well, it's just a softball glove. A 12-inch softball glove is bigger than that.
I'd have to look at the USSSA rules or the ASA rules.
Yeah, I would have to look at those. Now, there's some pretty big ones, though. Anywho, we have Hurricane, and we're trying to get Carl to talk a little bit about, just about everything we do in the news. Not us, but we only really care about the people with money, right? So we're talking about all these people on the coast, but that hurricane, even though it wasn't 185 when it came on shore, was about 90 when it went across the rest of the country, which is, pretty darn strong winds. And I'm going to say that the middle of the country, which is pretty poor, a lot of ranching and farming and, people like that, people living in trailers and stuff. I don't think anybody's even talking about the destruction in the middle of the state. And I bet it's massive. And I don't know if any of those people got insurance, Kevin, or enough. I guess you get insurance for a trailer, but
sure you can. What the problem is that if you don't live near water, you probably don't have flood insurance. And even if you do, you might not. You're not. A lot of people don't buy flood insurance, but they have experienced flooding now, and so in most of those cases, they're not covered.
Didn't Nancy say if you're not considered a floodplain, you almost can't buy flood insurance? You can buy flood insurance for pipes or sewers backing up, but I don't think you can buy regular old flood insurance. Isn't that what she said last week? I have to ask her about Monday.
I don't know if there's any restrictions on you. I'm sure if there's little flood risk, they'll probably be happy to take your money, though.
I suppose.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you could. I'll give you an example. Our old buddy Bob Golden, when he lived in suburban Milwaukee, there was a stretch of big storms, and the way his garage was drive around back, and then it was under the house, so it was down, and he had flooding, and it ruined the car. He was fortunate because he didn't have flood insurance, and there was no reason to suspect that he needed it. But I do remember that he was fortunate in that his auto insurance comprehensive plan covered it.
Well, if you have, we're going to be sort of specific here, but because I've seen all three, a floodplain means that you're close enough to a river, a stream, or something like that, to where within the last 100 years, that thing has gotten to your house, basically, right, or something along those lines, or twice in the last 100 years, and those kinds of things. Then there's the flood insurance that virtually nobody has in the city, where the sewers back up, and it's not just flood water, it's all kinds of other stuff in the water, which is real bad. And that's happened into my place until we put a backup thing on there to cost $11,000. That's that kind of flood insurance. Then there's spots where, like Bob was, which happened like in Evergreen Park, where everybody has a sump pump. And if all of a sudden it rains so much and the power goes out, you can flood from the rainwater just coming in, yeah, and not getting pumped out. So
sure. Lots of flooded basements, for example.
Yeah, because the way that's designed, I mean, the guy next door barely got his Mercedes out because he had one of those driveways that went down just like Bob. And at the bottom of the driveway, there was a sewer line that went into the sump pump to be ejected out, or ejector pump. So when the power went out, that's why the most important thing for your generator is not necessarily for your refrigerator, it's for your sump pump. That's why people have generators more than anything else. I mean, the stuff in your freezer can go, but not, it's not going to go in 20 minutes. But if it's really raining, it's some pump better be working, right? But I'm looking here at this thing called a Buford scale on wind. It is really something. There's a couple of them here. This is the one estimating how much the different degrees of, well, let's see. A 4 to 7 is considered a light breeze. Wind felt on exposed skin leaves a little rustle. 8 to 12, gentle breeze. Leaves and smaller twigs in constant motion. 13 to 18, moderate breeze. Dust and loose paper is raised. Small branches begin to move. 19 to 24, small trees sway. 25 to 31, large branches in motion. Blah, blah, blah. If you get down here to 74 to 95, considerable widespread damage to structures. And once you get over like 95, the difference is like 120, where windows and roofs might go 125 or 130, the whole building's liable to go if it's wooden or something like that. So I mean, it really is amazing how it works its way up. And so if you're talking about an area, it's like a ranch or something, where all of a sudden the wind's 90 miles an hour. I mean, there's not much left of that barn or anything. I mean, it's pretty nasty. Because here, just for an example, the expanded Category 1 hurricane is winds 74 to 95. It says, let's see, large branches of trees will snap and shallowly rooted trees will be toppled. Extensive damage to power lines and poles likely result in power outages. It could be last to a few to several days. This is Irene of 1999, Katrina 2005. Several others were Category 1 hurricanes that landfill in South Florida. Category 2, winds 96 to 110. Extremely dangerous winds will cause extensive damage. Well-constructed frame homes could sustain major roof and siding damage. Many shallowly rooted trees will be snapped or uprooted. Near total power loss is expected with outages that could last from several days to weeks. Francis of 2004 was a Category 2, along with 10 other hurricanes which have struck South Florida since 1894. Category 3s, there was a hurricane in 1909, 1910, 1929, 1933, 45, 49. The ones that were named were King of 1950, Betsy of 65, Jean of 2004, and Irma of 2017. There haven't been too many of these. Well, actually, there have been, but it's not like they're all just recent, Kevin. Category 4s, 1888, 1900, 1919, 1926. The Great Miami, my hurricane was 1926. Lake Okeechobee, Palm Beach was in 1928. Donna, in 1960, made landfall in South Florida as a Category 4. There's only been a couple of Category 5s. Andrew in 1992, and the Keys hurricane in 1935. I think that's the one that Humphrey Bogart was in, right? Key Largo?
Yeah.
Was that about? There have only been two Category 5s that have hit, but it says fallen trees and power poles will isolate residential areas. Power outages will last for weeks to possibly months. Most of the area will be uninhabitable for weeks or months. Did you see the pictures of Venice? It was all over YouTube. There's like nothing left of the place.
All yeah, the destruction, you saw the Tropicana Field too, didn't you?
Was that the one where the roof's half gone?
Yeah, that's where the Rays play.
They'll be happy to be out of there.
Well, nobody likes that stadium, so yeah, I'm sure they would be very happy to.
Here's my solution:
to bail on it if they could.
Let the White Sox leave, and ask the Rays if they'll take Sox Park at the same rental rate that the Sox are playing. Blue smoke will be coming out of their ass getting up here. Just saying.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I'm stunned the Bears win a couple games and now they're right back into this stadium thing. Kevin, we're in the news a little bit. We're doing podcasts and we've been on the air, and maybe on the air again one of these days. But why is the here's a question for you. Maybe you could ask your students. Why is the truth such a closely guarded secret?
that's a good wording right there. That would make a good headline for an essay.
I can't even imagine if somebody were to, Now, you have to estimate because it's not public, but you can probably get some kind of a pretty good idea from the stuff that's coming from, you know, TV contracts and stuff. The Bears have been in Soldier Field for, well, the new stadium is how many years? Is it 10 or 15, 20 now?
Oh, 20? It's probably up to 20 by
okay,
now.
Okay, so it's 20. Well, it's probably 20. They got another year or two left on the lease, so it's probably 18 or 19. But anyway, say it's 20.
It would have been in the early 90s because they completed it shortly after I left Chicago for good.
Okay, so whatever it is, pick 25. Now, if you were to put, just say, without any editorial comment whatsoever, and on the front page of the Tribune, I keep saying it because it's, you know, I still think it's a newspaper. If you were to put on the front page of the Tribune or first front page of the sports section, without any comment, with any editorial comment like you and I couldn't resist doing, if I just put a chart there listing the Bears' team value, the Bears' income, and the rent for the last 25 years, and how much the rest of the population still owes on the place by year, you publish that chart, nobody's going to listen to this guy, Kevin. Why that rent has not accelerated along with how the team's doing? And if they were they pay like $6.5 million a year, if they paid $10 million a year, which still is not all that abusive, especially the last 5 years, you know, there's almost as much debt on the place now as when it started. I mean, how can you ask for another one when you bankrupted the place on the one you're in and you made all the dough? And that's balls. That's absolute balls. And I'm not saying they should get it, not get it. That's not my call. But nobody knows those numbers. Everybody thinks the Bears are getting screwed on this deal. You talk to a Bear fan, hey, they don't get any money for the concerts. Well, they don't own the place. Why should they get money for the concerts?
Yeah, and if they build in Chicago, they're not going to own the place either.
Well, no, but they want all of it.
That's not a counterpoint. That's just an add-on point. And I say that because that's part of what they're looking at. I'm sure they would prefer to be on the lakefront in Chicago. You know, I've seen the renderings of what they do in the stadium that they've kind of drawn in the renderings that they rolled out. First of all, that looks a lot more like the stadium in Phoenix, which is way out in the Phoenix area, which is way out in Glendale and stands alone, than it does SoFi Field in Los Angeles. And I would say that, you know, the what they're thinking now just is going to crap up the lakefront. It's going to be an eyesore on the lakefront.
Oh, sure.
Just this big blob. Whereas if you go look at, you know, what SoFi Field looks like in Los Angeles, or SoFi Stadium, it's actually a nice design. So that's the first, you know, one problem I have with it right off the bat is it's ugly.
Yeah.
Setting that aside, of course they want to do it in the city, because, you know, I think they've decided as a strategy that tying up less of their own money is a much better deal than forking more of it out themselves to be in Arlington Heights. Now, you know, little old me is sitting here thinking, yeah, but if you're in Arlington Heights, you can do what Mark Cuban is doing with the deal he cut on the Dallas situation with the Mavericks, and that is, you know, they're building a whole entertainment district there, so. You know, so that, you know, he's betting that the entertainment district is going to be the I don't want to say cash cow, because that's not the right term for it. It's going to be the cash generator, and he's going to make a lot of money off of that. And so he was willing to give up the team to do it. You know, I get that, and you know, that's the thing that, you know, I think the Bears have to look at is, if they can come up with the cash that that'll be required in Arlington Heights, they could probably make a fortune building out an entertainment district out there. In general, now, does the world need another entertainment district? That's a good question. Does the Northwest suburbs need that? That's for people who gauge those kinds of things to figure out. But that's what they're really doing is. you know, I'm sure everybody likes the lakefront, but, you know, the Halas family has just decided that forking out less cash up front to get a deal, even if it means they're renters instead of owners, and even if it means they can't do anything else with the property, is a better deal for them. And that's all. There's no reason to feel sorry for them. They're just making business decisions and seeing how much they can do with other people's money.
Well, if you were to take, I'd actually bet somebody an adult beverage on this. I would. I'm going to say for the last 50 years of ownership, the Bears have paid less in rent or whatever you want to call it for their facility than anybody else between Wrigley Field and Soldier Field. They never put a dime of their own money into anything, did they?
Yeah, I don't remember what the deal was when Soldier Field was.
They got $100 million from the NFL. Daly was very proud of that. He told me about it when we were in the gym together. I don't think if the Bears came up with anything, it was minimal.
That's what I would expect to learn. Yeah. They really didn't have any skin in that game.
That's why when people, again, knowledge is interesting. How many times have you heard people ragging about they can't host the Super Bowl? Well, the Super Bowls, except for, well, since there's new stadiums around, one of the things they do is to the city, when the city says, I don't want to give the team enough money, the NFL says, well, if you pony up dough, we'll bring a Super Bowl there. Remember, they did it in New York in the wintertime.
They've done it in Detroit. They've done it in Minneapolis.
But the number is, I don't know what it is now, the number used to be $100 million. But that's what they would tell the city a Super Bowl is worth to you. Now, it's not worth to you in taxes. It might be worth to you in hotel rooms and stuff like that. Maybe. I don't know who keeps track of that and whether they actually... But the number was $100 million. So the Bears essentially already got their $100 million directly from the NFL. So they weren't going to get a Super Bowl on top of it. They already got it.
Well, and you're not going to get an outdoor one anyway, and you know you're not going to get one if you have an outdoor stadium.
Oh, well, they surely did. The Meadowlands got one.
Not that time of year.
The Meadowlands got one.
Who did?
The Meadowlands, the new stadium there.
Did they play one at the Meadowlands? I don't remember one.
I think so. Ricky, would you mind looking that up? I think they did. They got one. It was I'm going to say, when did that thing open? 5-6 years ago. The new stadium, they got one. I'm pretty sure, Kevin. We got a few minutes here before break, not very many. I'm stunned. I was talking to Lou yesterday, obviously, about the this new thing. For those that don't understand what's going down here, maybe we'll just set it up before the break, but everybody knows that college football is moving into whatever direction. We're not sure, but it's going there pretty rapidly. Well, the latest is that, and it's been, somebody has been going around various colleges making presentations, and evidently the Irish are all over this, Kevin.
By the way, 2014, February 2014, they did play at the Meadowlands.
Yeah. The former athletic director of the Irish is leading this charge, right?
Yeah, not one of my favorite people, by the way.
No. But what is it?
And never was, so.
So what the story is now is, there's so much money, allegedly or in fact, in this college football that a group of, let's say, private equity people have decided, you know what we'll do? We will go to Notre Dame, Alabama, Georgia, you name it, and we will essentially take, somebody will take the management of this now essentially professional franchise. We will put money into it, and we will share in the revenue. So it's going to become a business of a professional football team in South Bend, in Tuscaloosa, that is run by something where the university may still have 50, 60, 70% of the, I'll use the term stock, Kevin, it's probably the same thing, right? Or partnership share, whatever you want to call it. And it's going to be run kind of totally separate from the regular athletic department, I suppose, in a move.
Well, it's going to be run separate from the NCAA. Whether it's run, yeah. how it's run separately from the athletic department is to be determined.
But I think it also means that in their mind you will get out of all these Title IX, all these other things, because it's not going to even resemble just giving people scholarships like it was before. So all that, I think, in their mind is going to be out the window. Now, whether Congress and the Supreme Court will agree with that, you know, to be determined, but money seems to win all the time.
And I think that's going to be a tough sell, that it's going to be it's going to, at least, what I texted you yesterday, what are the Title IX implications? Don't know the answer, to be litigated, and it will be litigated.
Well, but I mean, we're saying it's not. Well, now the question is, does that remain nonprofit? I don't see how that could happen.
I don't see how you can do that and merge in the private equity and make that claim.
But I mean,
if somebody's expecting a return on investment.
I mean, and this is what is being proposed. And I don't think they're going to get 70 schools, Kevin. I think the maximum number you're going to get here is probably 50. Not even there.
Well, that may be, Tom, but they did talk about a relegation system. So, in other words, there's different tiers, sort of like Euro soccer, where if you're not very good, you fall down to a lower tier. There's less revenue available to you, but there's also less less expense involved with it as well. So I don't know if that's an answer to anything or not, but I did see that that's part of the plan. They didn't really expound on it in the article very much. But the idea there is that if you're one of the worst teams in the higher tier, that I think they talked about three tiers. If you're one of the worst teams in the higher tier, you drop down. If you're one of the best teams in the lower tier, you have the opportunity to move up.
Well, you know, let's explain a little bit of that after break, because Ricky probably knows more about that than I do. But S&P futures down 5, NASDAQ futures down 60. Again, bank earnings are out today. We've got J.P. Morgan is up. It's only up $3 now, but it was up $4. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up eight stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricky on the board. SP futures down 575. NASDAQ futures down 61. We just had Wells Fargo posted lower earnings in revenue amid an 11% decline in net interest income. I'm not sure how that happened, but that's what happened. The poor Wells Fargo. Over in Asia, the Nikkei up 224. They continue a little bit of a rally there. Up 39,605. Hang Seng up 614. That's 3%. So they've made back a lot of the 9.4% they dropped the other day. Shanghai, however, is going the other way, down 84, 2.5%. So the CSI 300, which is another one in the Shanghai, they're down 3% of the week. So it's kind of an odd goings on over there with them pouring money in, and it's made it very, very volatile for sure. No, I think nobody really knows where it's going to land. Over in Europe, we're a little bit mixed. DAX up 45.2%, FTSE down 12.1%, CAC around up 13.1%. So everybody's looking at the PPI is coming out in a little bit after the slightly higher CPI yesterday. Not really that much hotter, but somewhat. Yesterday, the Dow was down 57, S&P down 12, NASDAQ down 9. This is after being up and down a lot of the day. It was positive for a while. Bonds, unchanged, but 4.10. The Bund up 4 basis points, 2.30. Japan, 0.96, going toward that 1% number. Oil, down 53 cents, 75.32, still at the high end of the recent range. Brent down 55 cents, 78.85. Natural gas up 2 cents, 269. RBOB down a penny, 213. Gold, which has been sneaking back up here, it's up 18 bucks, 2657, kind of right in the middle there. Doesn't seem to want to make a run to 2700, but maybe it will. Silver up 14 cents, 3138. Copper up a penny, 444. Foreign exchange, euro is pretty much unchanged, 1093. British pound, 135. So virtually zero there on a movement today. Crypto up $1,500. Bitcoin, 61,142. Since the Fed has cut interest rates and told everybody what they're going to do, the long-term rates have gone straight up. Gold has gone straight up, and oil's gone straight up. So something is fishy going on here. Question is what? What do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 54 degrees right now with a high of 84. Sunny to partly cloudy, breezy, and quite warm for October. And tonight is going to be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 73 degrees. With a low of 58 degrees. That was my mistake. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 78 degrees right now with a high of 105. Sunny and very hot, so make sure to keep hydrated. Tonight will be very clear to partly cloudy with a low of 73 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe is 23 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 38 minutes. We're looking at 19 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 21 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 21 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday in the MLB, the Guardians beat the Tigers 5-4, and the Yankees beat the Royals 9-1. Today we got the Padres playing the Dodgers at 7:08 p.m. in L.A. NFL yesterday, the 49ers beat the Seahawks 36-24. And don't forget, this Sunday, October 13, we got the Bears playing the Jaguars in London at 8:30 a.m. and the Cardinals playing the Packers at 12 p.m. Lastly, hockey season is here. The Blackhawks lost to the Utah Hockey Club this Tuesday, 2-5. But not a great start, but there is a chance for redemption as they play the Jets today at 7 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
You know, the real quick on the stadium thing before we get back to the college, I have a couple of studies up here, Kevin, by people who wrote pretty, you know, serious white papers and the how basically cities get screwed by helping out with these sports teams. And I think the lady who wrote it, the two examples she used were two ridiculous things they did in Salt Lake City. One, I think, was a AAA thing, and another one was a either soccer or, I don't know, it was hockey, whatever it was. I don't think it was hockey, but about both of them didn't meet any of the expectations, so they didn't make any of the revenue they thought they would, and they were total disasters. So I, back in my mind, I thought if one city was never going to do this again, it would be Salt Lake City. You could knock me over with a feather when I found out that the Coyotes from Phoenix, because they wouldn't build them a stadium, are now moving to Salt Lake City. Does that mean those idiots are going to build them a stadium?
Probably.
Should I send them these studies? But people
know probably where the Jazz plays at the Delta Center is. I don't know if that's convertible to hockey or not.
Where they played the other night, it was 11,000 seats.
Oh, okay. So they're playing in some small stadium, and I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
They must have had a minor league hockey team there before. So, yeah, they're not going to be in front of 11,000 people permanently. So I'm sure they're building them a stadium. I'm sure they got a commitment for that.
Well, we really, for the next 10 minutes, we could really use our friend Mike. Maybe we'll ask him if he wants to come on Wednesday. But in Europe, I know this for Americans, this is going to sound so bizarre. I mean, here, for some reason, we've given monopolies to the football, basketball, baseball stuff in hockey, and nobody seems to know why. Where if you want to get a hockey team, you got to, like, buy a spot. First of all, they have to approve expansion. Then you have to contribute, like, a bunch of dough to all the other owners. I mean, can you imagine if you open up a bar, you have to pay all the other owners in town before you could open it up, and they'd have to approve you? I mean, this is so un-American, it's scary.
Approve or deny.
Well, that's why Cuban ended up basketball, right? They didn't want him in football or baseball?
Yeah, there's lots of people who've been sort of blackballed out of one league. But
I think Trump got blackballed.
Managed to find their way into another.
But in Europe, and Mike did this once, I'm trying to remember what he was saying. Ricky, if I'm wrong here, there's various leagues, say, in Britain for soccer. There's the top-tier league, and there's a league under that, but I don't know if it's every year, Kevin, or every other year. The best team in the second league moves up to the top league if they want to. And the crummiest team in the top league has to move down to the other league and win that one to get back up, right?
Yeah, relegation and promotion, yep.
And Can you imagine that here? Like the Sox suck so bad that all of a sudden, you know,
the Sox would be dumped to Class A ball.
Well, the Toledo Mudhens all of a sudden are in the American League, right?
Well, something like that would be pretty hard to do based on stadium size and all of that kind of stuff for baseball. But you know, that would be interesting. I'm trying to think of the sports that would lend themselves most to that. I mean, clearly it'll work for college sports because their facilities are all in the same rough ballpark, you know, some bigger than others, obviously. But the idea behind it is to promote the highest quality in the best leagues. And okay, that makes sense. But yeah, it would be very strange to see how that could get implemented in U.S. sports.
I mean, the Sox are going to make how many million dollars this year? You know what I can't find, Kevin, and it's got to be there somewhere. When I went through the salaries of all the payrolls of all the teams that are in the playoffs, first of all, I was absolutely stunned that five of them are in the bottom nine.
I'm really not.
Well, you know, when I see the way they're playing and the young people they have, but you know what I can't find? I can only find where the team started the year in payroll. I can't find a list that says where they ended.
Yeah. So if you acquired players, I doubt that anybody substantially shifted their payroll, though.
Well, I can't believe the Sox ended the year at $142
million. Agreed, because they dumped off some salaries, although, again, they dumped off people that where they had some control. They still had control over them.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I don't have Cub tickets anymore. Well, first, a couple of years I couldn't give them away. That's a problem. But the 1 year, I mean, I'm paying whatever we paid for the seats, 50, 60 bucks a seat. This was a while ago. They started the year with the big payroll, and all of a sudden they decided to dump everybody halfway through the season. And I'm thinking, I should get a 20% discount on the. This is like, you know, buying a ticket for the opera when Pavarotti's there and he's not there, and they say, well, so what? We got Ricky singing it just as good. No, it's not.
I didn't. Hey, Ricky, let's hear a few bars.
Yeah, let's hear a few bars.
Let's hear what you got.
Well, let's put it. It might be okay when Ricky did it. If I did it, you wouldn't want it going on. But I mean, no other venue does that other than like professional sports. I mean, they really got you by the short hairs, and they never let go. I mean, but the idea that you can get rid of five or six of your best ball players in the whole second half of the year, you can't give the tickets away and yet they're the same price. I mean, you could never pull that off in the opera or in Broadway or anything like that. I don't think, could you? Just saying. And plus, you can never tell somebody if all of a sudden something got canceled on a Wednesday night that you're going to have the play on a Friday morning and everybody show up because you're not getting your money back. That's a neat trick that Major League Baseball uses if it's a rainout and stuff. But anywho, what did you make of Russell's young lady friend, Kiani, on Wednesday? She was pretty interesting, wasn't she, Kevin?
Yeah, I haven't listened yet because, as you know, I was having. Yeah. That was weird on Wednesday because I've made that same drive before while we were online and had no problems with it, so I have no idea what caused all of our choppiness and problems. But I still haven't had a chance to listen to it.
Say, if I go out, if Ricky goes out, Ricky, do you have an Apple phone?
I do.
A new one, fairly new.
It's a 14. No nice. Bragging, you know, but hey.
So, in other words, is this show being powered by AI this morning?
No, not really.
We had a new sponsor, though.
Well, you know, I think this one is like maybe like 2 or 3 years old, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We got to get something where the show is powered by AI.
That'd be cool. I don't know if that's possible, though.
Well, it's possible to say it. Who cares if it's true or not?
Yeah, that's true.
Kevin, what do you. I mean, I looked yesterday, the government is going to have a 2.5% increase next year, the lowest in a while, in Social Security. Weren't rents up like 8 or 10% this year? I mean, how did it?
Because it's tied to the rate of inflation. So whatever they're telling you the rate of inflation is, the overall rate is what they're going to use to index it.
Well, there's
so they've been telling us inflation slowed down.
Well, is somebody who's not, you know, in the markets as much as the rest of us.
The moral of the story is, in an election year with any kind of incumbency involved, do not count on getting an increase in Social Security.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're going to get, I guess it's 2.5% is the number everybody's bantering about. I wonder if they're going to be the same as last year and raise the medical part of that like 5. We're telling you the CPI is 2.5 in what you're getting, but it's 5 in what they're getting. And you expect your population to be that stupid, which we must be collectively.
Oh, count on it.
count
on people to not to know. Count on our news media not to inform, and count on our government to lie about it. So, you know, we kind of have a pretty good trifecta there.
Well, you know, I have discussions with people, especially younger people, sorry, Ricky, in terms of the availability of news and information. And I'm surely not enough of a Luddite to know. I had a little bit of a curiosity, and when I saw the guy make the catch in the outfield, and the size of fielder's mitts, and within a minute and a half, and I'm probably not the fastest, I had every conceivable rule right in my palm of my hand, right in front of me on the internet. So in terms of accessing information, the world has never been like this. I mean, I get that part. But I also know that if you have one-tenth as many real reporters as you used to have, and no newspapers or TV stations pay these people to do any real news, that the vacuum that you're getting in actual news, whether it turns partisan one way or the other, the simple fact is, it looks to me like everybody's just reading somebody else's article and plagiarizing it like a Latin homework in high school, for God's sake.
I mean, yes, of course they do. And in fact, that's one of the things that you see, and you'll see it on like nightly news reports where they'll say multiple reports are saying, and you know, that's such a load of crap. It's not multiple reports. It's one report that multiple sites or websites or news organizations have picked up and re-reported. So yeah, that's real common.
When Matty Weber was still here, he would say, I mean, if I'm ever going to quote some article from somebody, it's probably boring, but I always make it a point to say whose article it is. And Matt Weber goes, Chief, what do you do that for? And I says, Matty, what are you talking about? How can I quote somebody else's article without telling where the hell it came from? I don't think anybody has a clue that that's what you're supposed to do. You know,
just citation, Tom? Sorry.
Yeah, I mean,
actually, we do sort of insist on it in the academic world. So,
you got to be
reasonably well with it.
But you got to be one of the old fart professors to insist on that. Actually, have a footnote.
I'm far less structured than most. I tell them you can do inline citations. I don't care if you steal ideas. You may have to expound on them, but you know, in the real world, you're. You know, it's a good thing if you go out there and you do some research and you find out what somebody with reasonable credibility and expertise has to say, and you cite it. Do just don't ever claim that an idea is yours that isn't yours.
That's
and
actually
Otherwise, I'm totally in okay with you. Using those ideas, you don't have to have all your own original thoughts. You can share them. You just better be able to. You better be able to talk about them. You better have some understanding of it.
I think it's actually more common than you think, Chief. Because I don't remember a professor that never asked me to that didn't ask me to add the the sources and everything. What do you call that? The bibliography or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to put the sources, and you
got
to do...
Yeah, you got your footnotes, you got, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
So, yeah, it's actually pretty common. They actually do teach you how to do that.
Well, the guy, when you get on TV, you forget it. Then you're all stuff like, most economists say, most noted analysts say...
Experts say.
Who are you? I still think the greatest line, before you were around, Ricky, the original Mayor Daley, Richard J. Daley, somebody was said something about the allegations are... What about these allegations? He goes, who are all these alligators anyway? That was his. Who are all these alligators? Let me see them. Bring them out here. That's the truth, though, Kevin. Bring them out here. Who the hell are they? How many times with earnings season coming up, earnings estimates are analysts say the street says, who the hell's the street? The street's a hunk of concrete. Who's the street? Give me one guy who gets out there and says, I'm the analyst. I say $1.50 for IBM. You know, who are these people?
Yeah, it's incredible. Experts say is my favorite.
Yeah.
You know, that's my personal favorite.
Some economists say, whatever. Is there going to be like a Pier 6 brawl in this Dodger San Diego game tonight? Boy, those two
they
teams
really don't like each other, do
no,
they?
No.
I love a good grudge match.
Yeah, it's we used to get those in softball all the time. Like, man, oh man. I guess the question would be, I've been dancing around here, Kevin. I'm trying to ask you. Is obviously there's this economic policy that seems to be going on that I never dreamed I would see in my lifetime again after doing all the stuff during the 70s and 80s on inflation. And yet here it is. And it's clearly a path to benefit the 1% and 2% of the world. And I didn't believe it for 7 or 8 years and probably didn't trade well because of it. I mean, I actually thought the market could go both ways. It never did. I never dreamed that the exchanges would be able to not have people on the floor anymore and not even make really good markets and just charge for quotes and make a fortune. That you would make all the money at the CBOE by owning a stock instead of being a trader. I mean, I never dreamed that this stuff would take this kind of move. And I wonder, is this thing going to turn out like this for college ball? Is it going to be nothing? Notre Dame's going to be a shareholder in Notre Dame football. I mean, maybe. I mean, you look at it and you go, no.
Well, I think they're headed that way. And the only thing, the positive thing I will say about it is, at least it's honest. You know, right now, you know, the whole thing is pretty much based on a lie.
Well, the thing that's not honest about it, and that's not the right term. The CBOE, I'll just take them as an example, or to trade, same thing. They were given essentially a monopoly to do certain things and to regulate their industry and do those kinds of things. Over a period of time, they decided they weren't going to do really any of that stuff. But somehow or another, the monopoly still stood, even though the reason for the original monopoly was you needed a building, you needed stuff, you needed people together. Now you don't need any of that, but the monopoly still stands. They own the product. They were given the product, Kevin. I mean, they were given the. I mean, how? You know, they essentially have taken. It's like, you know, the EpiPen. They took the technology from the Army, and now they have a patent. I mean, wait a minute. you were given that. I mean, you just wonder. But the economy. When are people going to figure out that whatever administration's in there, they've been being lied to for 20 years. I mean, you know, I know the old saw about you can fool some of the people all the time and all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. But somehow or another, the people who aren't being fooled have no voice or nobody cares what they're saying. It's crazy. Is there an end to it? Can they pull it off for another 2 decades? Maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, good question. How long do we have to do this? Up next, we have our resident revolutionary.
Yeah, I want to talk to Carl about all the stuff.
And he is right. I mean, there has to be a point where people say, I'm not putting up with this crap anymore. It's hard to believe we're not there, but we're not.
Well, you can fight all you want about left and right, okay? And, when I mention this to people, you know, they look at me like I got four heads because some of the guys at the softball thing last Sunday were anxious to talk about stuff. And the last 24 years, you have 12 years of Democratic rule, 12 years of Republican rule. Now it's wobbly because sometimes they had control of Congress, sometimes they didn't. You look at the numbers that Carl and Hal and the people on the show have educated me enough. You look at the 24 years of numbers, you swear there has not been a change of power in terms of where stuff is going.
Yeah, and what I would suggest to you, Tom, is that that it isn't that that if if you want to look at left and right, it has more to do with social issues and social policies.
Right, that's exactly right. Correct.
And maintaining, you know, maintaining the levers of power as much, you know, to your party's advantage more than the others. And it has more to do with that and less to do with economic policy, because there just ain't that much different, that much, if any, difference in economic policy. And that's where, you know, Hal likes to use the term uniparty, and again, he's right. The uniparty, you know, there isn't much difference from one to the next. Sometimes it has a little bit to do with how we spend it, but it's all trimming around the edges stuff.
But the chances of when you say it's a democracy and you have a choice, neither one of these people, I'm not going to say, well, gee, if I voted for Trump or if I voted for Harris, that person, the day after the election, is going to come out and say, hey, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to strangle this guy, at the Federal Reserve, and I'm going to tell him to do his job, which is to manage the money supply in such a way where we don't have inflation that we lie about for 2 decades, and I'm going to cut back on this stuff to where... And we're going to give out inflation numbers that are real, and we're going to give people the money supply numbers like we're supposed to. And by the way, we're not going to favor only 4 banks, for God's sake. I mean, what are the chances of either one of these people saying that? None.
No, the only thing I would say is I think there is some chance that Trump will be disruptive this time around in ways that he wasn't, but I don't think it's economic. It might be. I mean, there's a certain amount that he'd be in a position to do, but I don't think he's going to get enough support in Congress to do it. But when it comes to when it comes to things like the FBI and that whole security apparatus, when it some of those kinds of things and. I think he's going to rain holy hell on them if he can. Because they're the ones that went after him. So, he says he doesn't want to go on the revenge tour, but I think it's going to be the revenge tour.
I'd like to see.
I don't know that that's necessarily going to be done in a good way or that it's going to be good, but it will damn sure be entertaining.
I think some of the stuff has to happen. I don't trust somebody who has a personal agenda to do it. But let me ask you, regardless of the names of the people there, in our lifetime, we've had single-term presidents. We've never had a president who was relegated, even Jerry Ford could have won, right? We never had anybody who was relegated to just the one term that hadn't been there over 2 years. Just in terms of power, if, say, Trump gets in, And the Democrats stay in charge of the Senate, or both, or
I don't think they will if Trump gets in. But okay,
but I'm saying, what just in terms of the power structure, regardless of the name of the person or the party, what does a one-term president mean in terms of being a lame duck? If all you do is if you can stall whatever he wants to do his first 18 months or 2 years. Then what, are you home free till the next election? I mean, the dynamic has to be a lot different. I just don't know how much different.
Yeah, it'll be different, except that he does have a young and fairly talented VP candidate, so you could conceive of, let's just say it's a successful presidency by some definition. And I don't know that it's going to be, because I think whoever comes in next is really set up to be pretty screwed when it comes to economics.
Oh, okay, I think so too.
So I don't know that we're going to see something that you would refer to as a successful presidency.
It might be a Jimmy Carter.
Let's argue it and say it out. You know, I think if it's good, if it's economically we improve, if a lot of those kinds of things were to happen, then I think J.D. Vance would be set up to continue. And so the question is, would Vance, continue the same policies?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an...
And let's just say it's all a smashing success. We're doing all the right things, then you'd get, 8 years of that. So,
well, I mean, I just... I mean, I know it's not an absolute deal breaker. I mean, and you're right. It could be that if Vance were to continue on, he's younger and all that stuff. But it's just there has to be somewhat of a small dynamic there, because sometimes people in their second term, especially if they don't control the Congress, they don't do squat. Right? They just everything they try and do, they don't do. And you know, Obama tried to put a Supreme Court justice in with a year to go, and he couldn't do it.
And he couldn't do it. So you had that that issue. Yeah, what was Obama's big initiative? Because there wasn't much he could do at the end. Is he wanted to get the Iran deal done? That was going to be his legacy.
Well, it's hard to deal with those guys when they're just totally diametrically opposed to everything we believe in. I mean, it's not certainly it's not a hatred of the people over there, but the guys that want to use religion to take over other people, it's just not our way, right? And it is theirs, it appears.
It is theirs, it appears, yeah.
Who do you like this weekend? Are we going to have a bunch more upsets in the NCAA?
Yeah, you know what? I really haven't even looked at the schedule very much. Let's see what we have here in the minute that we have left. Football schedule. Well, let's just pull up the top 20.
I keep seeing these Big Ten teams playing, and I keep saying to myself, why is Michigan playing Southern Cal? Then I go, oops, they're in the Big Ten now.
Yeah. So as I scroll down, oh, good, Missouri's playing Massachusetts. That's going to be a big matchup. Texas-Oklahoma is kind of interesting. So, I 5-0 against 4-1. I think Texas probably has the better team. That's the game they play in the Cotton. I assume they're playing in the Cotton Bowl again, as usual. Their Red River rivalry would be part of that. Now, it's just an SEC rivalry now.
Well, the Cotton Bowl is now Dallas Stadium, right?
Yeah, they play in Dallas, yeah.
Penn State, not the old USC,
could be interesting. Penn State has to go out there. Stanford and Notre Dame, the Irish should win. If the Irish have any designs on being a playoff team, they have to win. They have to win the rest of their games. I'm looking, seeing who else looks interesting here.
Who are the last two bumps that didn't make it out of the Pac-10 somewhere else? Who are they playing this year? It's all just all independent
games? I can get you those. I'll get you those just a second. Ohio State, Oregon's a good game. That's Saturday night. So that'll be worth seeing. But let me get you and they've managed to recruit some new members, so there will be a Pac-12, which is kind of interesting.
Pac State 12, Boise State.
Well, it's going to be a Pac. It's going to be a Pac 6 or 7. But Washington State is playing Fresno State, and Oregon State is playing Nevada. And it seems to me that those two teams, Washington State and Oregon State, are playing each other twice this year, if I remember right.
I'm surprised at the rapidity with which the league folded. I thought it would be like a few years. It was 1 year, right?
Yeah, it just fell apart. It all came apart. Washington State is playing. Now, it looks like they're only playing Oregon once, but they've had games like with Texas Tech, with a lot of San Diego State, Utah State types of games. They closed the season with Wyoming. That's that wouldn't have been true a year ago.
Yeah, well, it's
so, but it seems to me they're lining up some Fresno State, San Jose State, or San Diego State types of teams to make a conference. And I read something about it a while ago and said, no, that's kind of interesting. Don't care very much.
Yeah, well. S&P futures down 6, NASDAQ futures down 62. You want to go right to Carl? Why don't we bring Carl on if he's here?
Oh, he is.
What's up, man?
I hope
we've talked a million topics here. Which one do you want to opine in while we still have Kevin?
Oh, why don't we go after what's about to happen in the CPI numbers?
The PPI's today.
Well, I understand that, but okay. So, CPI came out a little on the warm side, right, compared to expectations. I mean, not stupidly, but a little bit, right? Employment report was extremely hot as compared against expectations, as we talked about last week. And yet as I wake up this morning and look at the, you know, where everything is, the IRX is still trading at 4.5. So the IRX is trading a full 50 basis points under where the Fed is, which means that the market says, one way or another, you're going to do it. Now, there's a problem with this. It's called two hurricanes in the last couple of weeks. And has everyone forgotten the most basic economic equation? You know which one that is, right, Tom?
Well, there's a few, but which one do you think is the most basic?
The fundamental economic equation is MV equals PQ.
Yes.
Okay, that is the foundation of everything economic.
How many people know that?
Well, I know two people who don't. Harris and Trump.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, so, I mean, you could choose from, you know, Moe, Larry, or Curly.
Or the Chinese government.
The difference, Carl, is that Trump would have seen that at Wharton, so he's got to be ignoring it, whereas...
Well, he may have seen
whereas
it.
Whereas if you threw that one at Harris, she'd be completely baffled.
Well, you know what? Trump may have seen it at Wharton, but this one... I can assure you, he does not. He doesn't have the excuse that it was because he was drunk during the lecture either.
Right.
He doesn't drink.
He's a teetotaler. So yeah, I mean, he's either willfully ignoring it or he's completely forgotten it. So
yeah, but here's the problem. You just had two major storms go through the United States. No, we didn't cause them as humans. By the way, there is no data that supports that they are either more frequent or more violent. If you look at the total atmospheric energy, there's actually, believe it or not, this data actually is compiled. The various powers that be, NOAA and Hurricane Center and such, there is an index, which I didn't know a few years ago, but the more I dig into this stuff, the more I find that, hey, guess what? All the information is there if you go look. Total atmospheric energy of all tropical systems in a given year is actually a compiled piece of information. So a hurricane's
that's purpose, Pacific and Atlantic, right?
Yeah, and it's absolutely defensible. Okay, you cannot argue with it. It's a factual piece of information. And basically the purpose of a hurricane, if you want to get down to it, you know, why do they exist? What do? Is to take energy from the tropics and move it to the mid latitudes. I mean, that's what they do. They pick up energy from the oceans in the tropics and redistribute it northward. And because the jet stream goes west to east to the east. Okay. So it distributes it like that. And that, by the way, is responsible for a lot of our, you know, where do crops grow well in the United States? Where do we have extremely fertile land? And because, you know, it's where the energy goes. But the total energy, there is no trend in it whatsoever, up or down, over the last 100 years. And there is also no trend let's be fair. It's only really since the 1960s and late 60s and 70s that we have accurate data. Because prior to satellites, the only way you found out about a fish spinner storm was if you were the poor SOB that got caught in it in a ship. Okay. So if you had something that, you know, that spun up over the Atlantic and never hit anybody, there wasn't any way to see it. Okay. Now, of course, we have satellites. You can see all of them. But so you really can't accurately model this stuff. Anything prior to the
I think, Carl, that if just reading this thing here that I read earlier, I don't want to do the whole thing because everybody's been listening. I think there actually was more of these things back according to this. I'm looking at this Buford chart.
Yeah, Chief, there were, but the thing is that the data is
these are stuff that hit.
Right. The problem is the data's inaccurate. Prior to the 1960s, because we could not see them.
I understand, but if you just look at the ones that hit.
Oh, yeah, no, if you just look at the...
These are Category 3s. 1909, right. 1910, 1929, 1933, 1945, and 1949. Then we didn't get another one until 1950, Hurricane King, then Betsy in 65, Gene in 2004, and Irma in 2017. If anything, since 1950, they've been way less.
Yeah, the problem is that, again, the data is incomplete. But well, yes,
the wind, wind gauges, and where the thing came across, you know, this, you know, it's 110 miles an hour. Those, you had those in 1910.
Oh yeah, and you find out that, well, it was bigger than that when it blows it off your building.
Well, here the category four is 1900, 1919, 1926. Well, you didn't want to be around down there during the teens and twenties.
Right, and the other thing is that the deaths were because you frequently, your first warning was when the wind started to pick up. Okay, the deaths were hideous because you really didn't have any. You know, I mean, nowadays, if you get hit by something and you weren't ready for it 5 days in advance, you're the fool.
Well, the thing they knew, I remember this from reading Isaac Storm. The thing they knew, the biggest prognosticators meteorologically and the best at the time were a bunch of people in the island of Cuba. And right. they would, it's pretty hard to get in the Gulf from the Atlantic side. Now, this one spun up from the Gulf. From the Atlantic side, without Cuba at least noticing it came by. So they at least knew when it came by that it was in the Gulf and was going to hit somebody.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, I mean, any tropical system that spins up in the Gulf is going to get somebody, and that's just because there isn't any way for it to leave and not get someone,
right?
Okay, so I mean, that's just the way that works. But so yeah, if anything that went over Cuba was like, uh oh,
duck everybody.
I don't see the one that hit Galveston on here. Was that a three or a four?
Galveston Kane, I think, was a four. That was nasty.
Oh yeah,
how many
animals died and everything because they were still doing horse drawn carriages and stuff. Oh,
right. I mean, it's from an economic point of view, the point is that you're going to have a huge demand spike for all sorts of stuff. Okay, I have a friend of mine who's actually contemplating quitting his job in the middle of the country. He doesn't make great money, but he makes decent money. He has a friend of his who is affiliated with a company that has a Florida license, contractor license. Because Florida does not allow the wildcat contractors. It's a felony, and you'll go to prison for it. So you have to be registered with the state. They mean it. They really will throw you in jail. But they have a Florida contractor's license, and they chase these storms and do bang up roofing businesses for the next 6 months, okay, every time one of these things hits. And this one, they're expecting to be especially nasty because instead of grazing the coast, it went across the state. So, and it's not so much that the storm was so evil and ugly. I mean, at the time it came in, it was probably a high-end cat, too. All right, I mean, everybody's saying it was oh my God, it's a five, it's going to destroy everything.
What caused it to drop 60 miles an hour in the last 30 miles.
Well, I saw that coming, and I was there's a thread on my forum that we were talking about it, and there were two things that were happening. One is that there was a lot of shear that was just south of where it was headed, so it had to go through there in order to get to the coast. And the second is that there was an enormous amount of dry air that was just north of the Gulf that buckled around the backside of it. That was predicted as well. And of course, hurricanes run on moist air, right? So it sucked a huge amount of dry air into the southern part of the western and southern part of the circulation in the last 12 hours. And that just, took all the steam out of it. But, I mean, the problem from a standpoint of impacts is that in Florida, if you are in a well-constructed place, wind isn't your primary problem. Your primary problem is surge, and there's absolutely nothing you can do to defend against that. Right? I mean, you're either above the level that the water comes up to or you're not. And it was going to drive because of its former strength, even though it was weaker when it came in, most of the surge impact was baked in the cake by the time it got within, 100 miles.
Well, I saw some videos on YouTube of Venice is gone pretty much.
Venice. So watch out with the videos because, of course, nobody shows the part of the town that's not wrecked, right? Venice is a. I know people that live there, and I'm reasonably sure that the home that they live in is still there and did not get wet. If Venice is an extremely interesting place because you have a lot of very high rent real estate, very low to the water, especially
that's
the northern
part. That's
what I was
part. Seeing on the video.
Right, especially on the northern part of the island, okay? And that area absolutely was going to get pounded, and I wouldn't be surprised if every one of those houses got wet because none of them are elevated, and you get a 10-foot surge, those are all, they well, all have 3 or 4 feet
at,
of water in the living room.
I stayed at Longboat Key, Audrey and I, have one of these things with yeah. the CBOE. I don't think the thing was 10 feet over the water anywhere, even on the golf course.
Well, that's the problem, is that, you know, I mean, you and so, but, I mean, this is an absolutely foreseeable wreck that was going to get them eventually and did, okay? Now, there, however, down by the airport, if you want to know where the wise people built in Venice, there is an airport on the island, okay? And that airport has 17 or 18 feet of elevation at the runway. But that's its, I mean, you know, if you look it up, you can look it up on the, you know, you just Google what's the airport elevation because, you know, every pilot has to know that to set their altimeter, right? So I think it's like 18 feet. And there is a decent amount of the area where residences are on the island, which, by the way, is not as desirable because it's not right on the water, right?
Yeah. Well, it's...
that, you know, yeah, that is, you know, is 18 feet above ground. So in those places, they did not get wet. Now they, you know, they still got hammered with a, you know, with a Cat 2 hurricane, but you know, you're talking about places where people built with intelligence. They're, you know, the construction is reinforced cinder block with poured walls, and the homes are there. However, if you've got 5 feet of water in the bottom, well, you got problems. So yeah,
Carl, what is the thing that as Kevin and I were talking about earlier? Nobody talk. If you don't have money, you're not in the news, right? Unless you're complaining about something.
Right.
What is, let's say it's a Category 1, which I'm looking here at the Buford scale, 74 to 95 miles an hour. Tommy Shanahan, who used to be on the show until he moved out to the West, grew up in Central Florida somewhere. And he said, if these things come across Central Florida, man, one that did that not too many years ago when he was doing the show, he was saying, you know, nobody even pays any attention to those people. Migrant workers that are working in the farms, a lot of people living in trailers, a lot of ranches. He goes, those places are just decimated. Nobody has any insurance. I mean, because that, even though it's not as sexy as, you know, the $1 million house going down, he goes, there's massive damage. Because these towns are, they're like, you know, something in Arkansas. There's the construction there is not like it is on the coast. Because I haven't heard one report saying how Central Florida made out. And this thing was still 80, 90 miles an hour going through the middle of the place. So there has to be massive damage there. I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, that's those parts of the state, through the center of the, and here's the other thing. Even fairly near the water, there is an awful lot of trailer activity, okay, and it's just because that's where the pores are, so to speak, right? You don't have a lot of money. What are you going to live in, right? It's well, and like it or not, Florida has an awful lot of places where that's that is a permitted dwelling. You're allowed to do that. So and if you're in a manufactured or mobile, and one of these things comes, you're done. I mean, there's just no way that your house is going to survive that. It's not going to happen.
What is the when you talk about the building, and Dan was saying that on Wednesday as well, or yesterday, I'm sorry. Contrast that with the story. My sister-in-law's cousin had a place wherever the last hurricane hit, Fort Myers or whatever, and there's the beach, there's some stuff, there's the road. Big parking lot, they're a 12-story place, which it's got to be how many of those along the coast down there.
Right.
And, people left their cars in the lot.
And they got wrecked.
Well, not only got wrecked, but they were banging up against the building in the...
Right, that's what happens.
And so it's been 2 years. They don't even know, they don't have a determination yet whether the building is going to be condemned and torn down or whether they're going to try and get a bunch of structural engineers and fix it. Elevators don't work. I think people were able to use the stairwells to go up and get some of their belongings, and that was it. You know, no one else can come down. The elevators don't work.
Right.
It's been 2 years. I mean, what is... We know that Home Depot someday is going to sell a lot of plasterboard and roofing stuff, but when are these checks going to get written? They're not even, I don't think they're being written yet for Bill Murphy, my buddy I see once a week. My attorney buddy has a friend down there. He pulls out his phone. He goes, look at this. This is his brother-in-law or somebody. The guy's got a 110-foot sailboat lot in his on his front lawn with the bow in his living room. They just they just got it out of there like a month ago.
Yeah, it's well, this is part of the problem, is that what ends up happening is that so your standard insurance does not cover anything that comes water that comes from the ground upward. Okay, so anything that's a flood does not cover. It does, however, cover wind-driven rain. Okay, so water that comes from the top. If your roof gets torn off and it rains inside the house for 8 hours, that counts. It's under your windstorm deductible, but it counts. Any water that comes from the bottom is if you either have flood insurance or it's not covered at all. So you end up with these fights where, and there's stuff going around on social media right now saying, you know, when you call in if you've got problems, do not use the word flood. You know, it was all from wind-driven. Well, look, for every one of these, I mean, you're talking about constructive total losses for a lot of these houses because you're, you know, I mean, the damage is huge. Believe me when I tell you, every single one of those, the insurance company is going to send out an engineer and they're going to figure out if you're lying, you're not going to get away with it. If you're telling the truth, you will. You know, I mean, the truth is the truth. But if you're lying to try to avoid being denied because the claim came from, you know, from flooding, you're not going to get away with that. But that slows everything down because everybody tries to BS. Nobody wants to say, well, you know, I don't have coverage for that.
Well, I mean, yeah. there's like three different, earlier in the show, I pretty much tried to define, there's like three different kinds of flood, you know. In Chicago, if the sewers back up in your basement with like really dirty water.
Well, sewage backup is a separate rider. You have to have
that
cover it.
That's right. A flood.
But you can get that on a standard household.
Right, but if your power goes out and your sump pump doesn't work and you can't get the stuff away from your house, that's a flood for you. And then there's a floodplain flood, where you know you're in a floodplain and the creek makes it to your house or the river. Then there's the stuff like what happened in Houston where they got 9 inches of rain in an area they never got it before, and everybody floods even though they're not in a floodplain. I don't know if anybody was covered for that. So, I mean,
if you don't have flood insurance, no, you're not.
If you're saying there's no, Nancy said something about if you're not in a floodplain, you can't buy regular flood insurance.
Yes, you can. Yes, you. That's BS. Yes, you can. It's you are X-rated, which means you do not have any special risk, and it's pretty cheap, and you can buy it. It's about when I moved to Florida, it was a couple $100 a year. Now it's about $400, but still, I mean, $400 a year is not terrible. Okay,
but she said something about in Chicago. There was no floodplain listed in the city, and nobody in the city sells flood insurance, other than the stuff in your basement and stuff that you know back up and stuff.
No, it's
there. Okay,
you don't sell. You don't as an insurance broker, you take the application, but the actual insurance comes from NFIP. It comes from the federal government. They just get a commission.
That's what I thought. But
right, and there's no variation in cost between which broker you use because they didn't underwrite it.
Well, let's just say, well, this isn't right, but if everybody down here has insurance, when are they going to get the check? I mean,
well, if you're under NFIP, you'll get it. It won't take all that long. The problem with it, and one of the situations that comes up, and why an awful lot of these are not insured in Florida. So first off, if you're in a risk area, you have to have it in order to have a federally insured mortgage, no matter what it is. So if you are in a other than an X zone, if you're in an X zone, you do not have to buy it. But if you are not in an X zone, if you're in an AE or VE range, and this just, I mean, FEMA publishes a map. You look it up. What's your parcel? All right, where's it rated? But if you have it, the rule is, if you are more than 50%, and by the way, it's capped at $250,000 too. So you can't, if you have a $1 million house, you can't buy $1 million worth of flood insurance.
Okay, I did not know that. All right.
Right. The cap is 250K, period. That's the end of the conversation. If you get more than half of that in damage, if it, 250 hit for the structure, 250 for contents. There is a contents issue. But if you are more than 50% damaged, you must rebuild to wherever the re-rated maps are after the storm's over, so that you are no longer within a high-risk zone, or they won't pay. Well, if you're a slab-on-grade house, that's not possible, okay? Because you'd have to demo the whole thing and rebuild it on stilts.
Well, my interesting story I'll tell someday. I used to share a spot in the OEX with a dude. Real nice guy. Talk about things being wacky. Carl, my mom, he came to my mom's wake on a Tuesday. After a funeral and everything for my mom the next day, I hustled up the north side and went to his dad's wake. And he never even talked about it, and his dad, I don't know if he even talked about it to him. I see all these medals and all this stuff next to his dad's casket. Turns out the guy was like a destroyer captain in the South Pacific. And, you know, it was highly decorated. None of those guys ever... But anyway, Ronnie's parents had a place down in the Redneck Riviera, Biloxi.
Yeah.
And they were, the same thing. There was a beach and a road and some stuff.
Right.
And whatever storm hit there, I'm going to say 20 years ago, was
it was Katrina.
No, it was the one down the road from Katrina. The one that actually was really intense but smaller. They went further toward Florida, missed New Orleans. It might have been the same year.
I think that was Rita.
Yeah,
you
go down there, the place is gone.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, the insurance company claims it was all surge. And they're saying, wait a minute, there had to be some wind because the surge wasn't supposed to be that high. They fought about that they never rebuilt.
Oh, everybody sues everybody.
But I think the parents got, the dad was still alive. They ended up, I'm going to say 40% on a dollar or something. They finally got a check and said, okay, but they never went back down there again.
Well, no, if that's the thing. If you get a total loss from FEMA, okay, on flood insurance, you're going to get the $250, and that's all. And it doesn't matter what the price is worth.
What if it's a like a condo building?
Well, then that's not good. That's typically not going to be covered by FEMA. That's going to be through the private reinsurance market because FEMA won't cover those. And so the other thing that you run into is that there's a thing called the coastal control line. And if you're seaward of that, if you're beyond that point, you cannot get NFIP insurance at all. Period.
See, I don't think they were. But
well, they probably weren't.
Storm was just bad enough to where it came and got them a couple blocks inland or a block and a half inland.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Well, a couple blocks inland, depending on where they are, that coastal control line can be further in than you think it is. And, it's elevation-based. And, I mean, it is on the maps, and you have to look. But the thing I think is interesting and important from a standpoint of economics and markets is that, and nobody's paying any attention to this, is that this is going to put an enormous inflationary spike into the system.
I would agree.
And
well, the Fed's already doing it.
Well, but the point is that this is just basic economics. This has nothing to do with what the Fed does, okay? This has nothing to do with what Congress does. Congress is going to amplify that by putting more into the M side, right?
Yeah.
And so you're going to increase that, and both P and Q are going to go up.
I know, we can't get confused. If Congress, they can do one of two things only. If they want to spend money, they can borrow it, meaning go into a deficit for it.
Or they can tax.
And the Fed doesn't have to help.
That's right.
If the Fed helps by printing more money, make it easier for them, or giving them credit, as you always say, same thing, then all of a sudden, it's like, Carl is now Caesar, and I walk to Caesar, and I go, hey, I can't make my, I was going to say my light bill, but I don't think they had lights in Rome. And you walk in the back room and spin me off a denarius. All of a sudden, you're popular, I'm happy. Everything's okay, but if you do that to too many people, all of a sudden the light bill price goes up, right?
Right.
Still, it's one of the most amazing things I always remember from Milton Friedman was, when inflation starts out, It feels so good.
Right. Well, that's you know, if go back to what I published a decade ago. If you look at leverage, okay, there's a chart in there that shows the impact, what happens over time from an inflationary policy where you have debt and GDP. And there's it creates a belly in the curve for a period of time. And that belly feels really good because it looks like more purchasing power for the same amount of money. Okay, it isn't, but that's what it looks like.
Well,
and that's
for the
person
who gets the money, it is good.
Well, it feels great. Okay, the problem is that what's going to happen every single time on the other side is those two lines are going to converge. And when they cross, you're screwed.
Okay, why don't we head off the break here? We'll come back for this number. Real quick break, Ricky. We'll be right back. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures down 47. This PPI number is not the biggest, greatest, but after yesterday, we'll see what it says. We'll be right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm just going to give the S&Ps are up 250. NASDAQ futures are down 28. I've got the final demand. Services rise 0.2%. Goods decrease 0.2%. Is that what you have, Carl?
Yeah, on both, but yes. So the goods down, services up, and the net is a nil. But I'm looking at the internals in the table. It'll take me a minute or so, but it looks like the...
I thought the services were bigger than the goods to the point where...
Well, they are, yeah. but what you had was a 2.7% decrease in energy costs. Okay. That's where the goods side negative came from. Foods were up 1%. That's bad. Everything less food and energy is plus 0.2%. In the goods side, but
the prices just went up the last week, so that's going to disappear next month.
Well, but that's this is the way it is, right? It's the gas prices last month were down, and that's that's in the energy side. So
So the number kind of doesn't really deflect from yesterday. It's, I guess, without being too conspiratorial here, I looked at the CPI yesterday. I think it might have been 2.2%. Home insurance on the year is up. Everybody seems to think it's been up 8, 10, 20. Anybody I talk to, depending on what part of the country you're in.
Well, it is.
But is that? I guess my question is, are we talking about a timing issue and that next year or the year after, if they don't go up at all, these guys, being the CPI people, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is that number going to percolate its way through, or is it a permanent lie?
I don't. It's going to be tough to know until then. There's homeowners insurance is kind of odd because, of course, for almost everybody, it's an annual thing, right? You get your renewal quote. It's once a year. Car insurance tends to show up more rapidly because although you used to be able to buy 1-year policies, that's almost. There are very few companies that write them anymore. Typically, they're 6 months.
I think I could do a year, but I'm on a 6-month plan.
Well, there are a few agencies that will write annuals, but they're almost never to your advantage to do it because then, of course, you lose the ability to shop it, right? And that's the only way to have stayed ahead of it. The auto insurance escalation has been outrageous over the last 2 or 3 years. And like it or not, Chief, the majority of that, if you actually look at the actuarial data, is coming from the illegal aliens that are driving without any insurance, without any money, and in many cases without a driver's license. And they're smashing cars, and the money to fix the car has to come from somewhere. They don't get anything, but unfortunately your car gets smashed. Okay.
The cost of fixing these new cars is off the chart.
Well, that's part of it as well. But you know, you take those two things and multiply them together, and you get double-digit increases. And so, I mean, that's the reality.
Mine actually went down.
Well, you may have now. Yeah, but then again, Chicago has had so many crazies running around with weed smoke pouring out the windows for the last crazy. 5 years.
It's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, right.
But you know what? This is not a plug for State Farm, but somehow or another, because I have this personal umbrella policy with them, and I have my renter's insurance with them, those went up a little bit, and because I have those with them, they lowered my auto insurance. Seems kind of odd, but I keep asking, are you sure you did this right? And he goes, yeah. Like,
okay. Well, I had stayed away from the big agencies for more than 20 years, living in Florida, and then even after moving to Tennessee, they just weren't competitive. But this last year, that was no longer the case. I'm now a State Farm customer again. Now, I used to be when I lived in Illinois, okay. But I am again, and the reason was that putting the cars and the house together cut the house insurance by 40%.
Wow.
Now, go figure that one out, okay? But, I mean, now how that multi-line discount was so large, I have no idea. I mean, all the other agents, you know, you always get one, right? You always get a multi-line discount. But that it was that huge... I'm like, are you sure this is the right number?
That's exactly what I asked this guy. You sure?
I'm like, they can't possibly. Well, that's what the computer. Okay, you know, but I mean, that has been the case for a while. I mean, it used to be, like if you had your car and your house at Geico, you might get 10%, right, or something like that, on the multi line. But yeah, it's the business has changed a lot, but there are. You know, if you're in a place where either one of those is unreasonably expensive, it doesn't help you much. That's the basic problem. If you're in an area like Florida, where you know State Farm won't even write anything within a couple of miles of the water, neither will any of the other major companies, and all the firms that do are little pup companies that you really have to pay attention to their financial
stability. They might be
owned
by State Farm or Allstate.
Yeah, but they're hived off.
Right.
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah, and you have to watch out and pay very close attention to their financial stability, because it is entirely possible for you to get damaged and then for them to go under in the wake of that, in which case you will get a ratable piece of your claim, but not all of it.
Okay, what is wrong with my thinking that I'm not saying I want an insurance czar, I sure as hell don't, but, you know, when I was younger, and you hear about these hurricanes, I mean, I'm real young, I'm talking about, you know, a lot of them hit places in Mexico and Texas and stuff where nobody even lived, and nobody cared. Now it seems like, you know, the obviously if it hit Miami, you had a problem, or Lauderdale. Right. But now it seems to me that with the population growing up the way it is, you really have a problem almost all the way from New York, all the way around Florida, all the way through the Gulf, all the way to the Texas, that there are a bleep load of people that live on the coast that think, you know, New York has had three major hurricanes, right?
Right.
If you go back in time. So, a couple, didn't one last year hit the Cape or something, or Newfoundland or something? If you were to somehow have all those places, you know, with some maybe rating for Florida or the Gulf, and put them in an insurance pool, what percent gets wrecked a year? It can't be a tenth of 1% of all those places.
I mean, here's the thing. Look, if people want to live on the coast, they want to live in a place where these risks are substantial. Okay, I mean the reality of tropical weather in particular is that, with rare exception, if you are more than 10 or 15 miles from the coast, you have a wind load issue potentially, but then again, you can have a wind load issue from a tornado.
Well, in Chicago too. Okay. Yeah,
right. I mean, you know, when I worked in Chicago, I saw a tornado come down the middle of the street. It was a very big one, but I actually saw it happen, and I'm in a high rise office building, and I mean, you know, there wasn't any substantial amount of damage from it, but it was
scary enough to look at.
Well, it was a twister, you know, yeah. You head for the stairwell, right? But I mean, the thing is that you're always going to get that kind of thing. And, you know, you live in the Midwest, there are tornadoes, whatever have you. But if you want to live in these especially high-risk areas, especially from tropical weather, and especially where surge is a factor, then, your insurance costs are going to be astronomical. And it used to be that everybody knew this was going to happen. Everybody knew it was just a question of when. And so if you had a place on the beach, it was a cinder block shack, and after the storm, you shoveled it out, took the pressure washer to the walls, bought some new furniture, and life goes on. Now, you have people building these Taj Mahal palaces out there, and then they want to whine about the fact that, there could be a storm. The same thing with all the canals on the west coast of Florida in particular, with the docks and everything else. You got all these guys with boats. Well, let me tell you something. When you get a boat in a storm like this, if it breaks free because you're a tool and you don't know what the blank you're doing, you've now got a 40,000-pound pinball bashing around into stuff. Okay?
Well, when they evacuated this one area, the entire marina looked like it was still 70% full. What happens to all those boats? They couldn't possibly have withstood a storm surge in the marina, could they?
Well, now that depends. All right, the biggest risk with marinas is that if you have floating docks and the surge is enough to pick the docks up off the pilings, you're done. All right, because now everything's unsecured, all the boats at once, and oh God! All right, I mean that's everybody's wrecked if that happens. If that doesn't happen, then the question is. Are there any tools in your marina? Because if there are, and you get one boat that gets loose, he wrecks everybody else. So it's, there's a yin and a yang to this. The third problem is that an awful lot of these places...
Were you better off with a dock or in a can?
Well, it depends on the construction. It depends, okay? I owned a larger boat when I lived in Florida for a good part of the time. And in most cases, my answer was the marina that I was in, I was insufficiently secure with not just the facility and its construction, but also my neighbors. And so I ran rather than stay put. But it depended on which...
Where do you run to? These guys would have to run, 300 miles up the Gulf, up north?
Well, it's... between Destin and Panama City, there's actually an option. You can go into the... There's a part of the intercoastal that actually has 40-foot high cliffs on both sides. And you go up in there and you tie off the trees, you keep yourself off the shore and out there. The problem with doing that is you have to stay on the boat because as soon as the storm's clear, the Army Corps reopens that channel to navigation, and you're going to get barges coming down that thing. And it's not straight. There's curves in it. They can't see you. And they come around a corner, and you're there, and you're going to get run over. So you cannot stay there for any length of time. Ivan actually found a slip in Panama City and went over there and tied up, and we were fine. We didn't take any damage. It was well protected. However, I thought I was going to get destroyed because one of the infamous tornadoes that large storms kick off came right up Thomas Drive, and about a block before the marina it lifted up, I saw it on live television.
Well, there were big tornado damage way south of this thing, almost down by Fort Myers.
Yeah, that there was a rather unique setup with this one. There was a huge blob of energy that was off to the east of the storm by about 150 miles.
Yeah, it almost looked
so.
Like another storm ahead of it.
It was, it wasn't a hurricane, but there was a lot of energy there. And hurricanes, of course, have rotating winds, right? So it set up the rotation in that blob of energy, and that kicked off a huge number of tornadoes across Florida that, much larger than normal. Normally you get a few. Sometimes you get some big ones. Ivan was especially nasty in that regard, too. There was a piece of energy off there. It kicked off some EF3s. Including one that slabbed a house three or four down from a friend of mine's over in Mariana. That sort of damage, that's just, it happens during these things. They get kicked off. If you get any energy away from a storm,
When does this Gulf start to cool down a little bit? We can say it's the last one.
Well, I mean, technically, you know, the peak of the season climatologically is August and September, so we're on the back side of it now. But you can get these storms into, you know, beyond Halloween. It's not common, but it can happen.
With the stuff we've been going obviously back and forth here today with the hurricane and all the other things and what it does to the economy and what, I mean, some stocks, you know, you might want to be purchasing. There's a timing part to that. I mean, Dan had a couple of firms down in Florida that he identified as in the infrastructure plan. They were in the asphalt business and all the other stuff. And
right.
And Dan, you know, Dan's really good at that stuff. And what did he say, Carl? It was a year and a half before they started getting checks to do stuff. It was a while.
If it's insurance related, it does take time because it was
government related. By the time you actually got the check out of Washington,
that can even be worse.
Yeah, it can even be worse.
The government's terrible. But I mean, you know, if you think about it, if you have a tornado and your house gets wrecked, and there, you know, you're out in the middle of Kansas somewhere, and there's five of you that, you know, that got wrecked, right? Because, you know, each of you had, you know, 200 acres of land,
yeah.
You know, whatever. You probably get the check pretty fast. When you've got a hurricane that goes across a state, it kicks off a bunch of tornadoes, and all of a sudden there's 20,000 claims, right, for this, yeah. All of this. It takes time for them to go through and get all that done. So yeah,
I asked Dan yesterday, and you know it's an ugly question, but I guess you got to ask it. As I looked at the Venice thing yesterday, or somebody who had a place that was he paid, you know, I'll pick a number, $404. It's kind of wrecked. The insurance gives them some dough. By the way, they tell if you want to insure it again, it's going to be, you know, $25,000 a year or some number that I'm hearing from some people. Is the end game that guy, you know, punts the place to you or me for $100,000 and we just say we'll self-insure the hell with it?
That's what's going to end up having to happen and should have happened quite a long time ago. The way flood insurance works is that if you are more than 50% damaged, you must rebuild to current standards or you can't buy it anymore. And so usually, in most of these cases, after the first one, it's essentially blackballed because you can't if it's a slab on. Okay, there's nothing you can do to change the elevation of the building other than tear it completely down and rebuild from zero. And then the other rule that's in there is after the second claim ever on that parcel, it's blackballed. So you can't buy it, period. Now, there are private options, most of which ends up underwritten by Lloyd's, but you will not like the number on that.
But this is not just there. I mean, if you go on the Fox River here, you'll see houses that are 2 feet above the river.
Right, and they do. They are going to flood,
and they probably have. So you're saying,
right.
This iteration, who's ever in there, is on their own probably by now.
If the reality of it is that you get one crack at this at a reasonable cost. The first time it happens on a particular piece of property, and if you're buying something down, especially down in Florida, you had better look and see whether or not there's ever been a claim on that property. Because and it is, you know, it is public data. You can get it, but you really need to figure out what's going on with that. It's really serious, because if in fact you buy something that has been that has been damaged in the past, you're either going to pay through the nose or you're not going to be able to buy it at all.
Now, is that with the county deed person or is that with the title company? Where would you find that?
No, that's in that would come directly from FEMA because they're the one, you know, NFIP is a FEMA program.
Okay.
But it does not run with the person, it runs with the property. So, I mean, like, you know, my home in Florida had, even though it had been subjected to multiple serious hurricanes, including Opal and Aaron, before I bought it, never took a flood hit. And so, and it was high enough on its elevation certificate that it was considered no special risk. Now, the thing is, after Ivan, they re-rated everything, and all of a sudden it was in a special risk zone. But because I had maintained flood insurance, it was grandfathered. And when I sold the place, that grandfathering is transferable. So as long as that guy that bought it doesn't get flooded, he can maintain the inexpensive coverage. Now, you know, it's only good for $250,000, but hey, that's better than zero, right?
So what happens if you have a, I'll pick on a place in Illinois instead of being on the coast,
right,
and you have the old maps showed, well, actually, most best example would be Houston. You know, there's right, a river here, there's a river there, there's a creek there, they're all in floodplains. All of a sudden, they had all that rain in that whole section. All of a sudden, the river never got anywhere near there. So now, all of a sudden,
right,
I guess somebody's going to review it and say this is now a floodplain.
Well, that's right. They'll change the maps after a major event.
And so now there you are. Now what? You get it the first time, or you didn't have it the last time? You probably didn't have any flood
insurance. So if you didn't have flood insurance before and you get flooded, you are still in the one deal here. Okay, so you are still in. You've been damaged. But you are not, now you're going to be rated at whatever that re-rated map is.
So you got flooded, you had no insurance, and if you rebuild, you can't get insurance. That's swell.
Well, you might be able to get it, but you're not going to like the price.
Okay.
Okay, now you because you have to be, your building's first floor level has to be above the base flood elevation in order to qualify for the cheaper rates. If it's not, and you can't elevate it, because, you know, what you built originally, there's no way to do it, and that's usually the case for an existing structure, right? Then you're stuck paying the higher price, and if it's been flooded twice, you can't get it at all. I mean, you get it, you're just not going to like the... you're really not going to like the number.
Hey, can I shift gears with you, Huge? I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in China with the... I'm not sure exactly what the government did. They dropped reserve requirements, I know. They did some other stuff. Let banks, you know, less capital. They essentially are going to try and solve the too many loans problem by more loans, which, you know, seems to be a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah, funny how that works,
but
right?
But the phenomenon that has hit the stock market, we're talking about, you know, the Hang Seng going from 17,000 to 21 or whatever the hell it is. I mean, it's big numbers. And it kind of just reinforces worldwide. I mean, all the guys on CNBC are clucking. It's like they all took a big thing of Viagra, for God's sake, about how this, you know, the worldwide, you know, the money's getting easier and the markets are going to go flying up and everybody's going to, houses are going to go up, and they got, you know, stocks that are 90 bazillion times earnings saying they could double from here, which in terms of currency, my question is, how the hell does China get to do that when they don't have the dollar? I mean, Shouldn't on a worldwide scale, shouldn't their currency have just dropped enough to where you didn't make any money if you had to bring it back into dollars?
Well, I mean, it's one of the funny things about it is that, you know, everyone crows so much about the supposedly, you know, with the world's reserve currency and, you know, this stuff, right? The reality is that any sovereign has the ability to issue, and it's, you know, money in its own currency, right? Whether or not there's any kind of staying power and capacity within the world economy for that is not up to you. Know, it's not up to your questions, right?
It's, well, that's, I mean, if you look at in the examples I always use, I mean, obviously nobody remembers the Weimar Republic, but it's a perfect example. You look at Argentina, you look at Turkey, you look at Venezuela, there's massive inflation. You look at their stock markets in their currency, they're to the moon.
Right.
In their currency. But in terms of dollars, they haven't gone anywhere.
Right.
In our market, in terms of gold, hasn't gone anywhere.
Right.
So, but I guess in terms of dollars, we will be fooled a lot longer here because we've never known anything different than the dollar in your pocket, me included. And our dollar still reigns supreme, although a little less supreme than maybe it used to. But how, I don't see how, if you're an investor in China, and those guys, I don't know, I don't follow their currency because it's not really traded, but if you and I somehow were able to get an investment on mainland, of course, mainland China is not even up, right?
Which is
even weirder. I mean,
so China's a weird situation,
yeah,
because there's actually two currencies that are the same, but they're not.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out if we were in one of those mutual funds that actually can invest on mainland China, I don't think we're up any dough.
Yeah.
Now, in Hong Kong, we probably are. But again, I'm fishing for the answer here. I'm asking the question here. Japan, I guess their market is up more than the yen is down. Because it's a two-step transaction.
Right. Right. So, but this is, you know, this is one of those things that happens with, and yet, Chief, if you look at it in real terms, okay, how many people in real terms have kept up? And I'm not counting the paper number on your screen, okay? When I look at my, you know, when I look at my trading console, that's that, yeah, okay, that might make me feel good. But it's meaningless in terms of actual buying power until I liquidate that and turn it into money, right? Because I can't buy groceries with the numbers on my
brokerage. Well, you can sure get a margin loan anywhere.
Well, if I want to pay, you know, what, three times the what the treasuries are paying for the margin. That's not always true.
If you had your account at PTI Pro Direct at IB, they're pretty cheap.
Well, IB is the outlier in that they actually have a reasonable price. Everybody else is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
It is what it is. But the reality of it is that it, and by the way, that's extremely dangerous if you do that. Because then if something happens to your stock holdings, you get every hole you've got. So I tend to think, you know, my problem with that, though, is that, okay, so if I look at the markets, they say this, but if I look at what people actually have as disposable income, you look at the Social Security announcement that just came out the other day. What's the adjustment going to be, 2.5 this year?
We're talking about the first part of the show.
Yeah, I heard that. There is no possible way that retired people on fixed income are staying even at a 2.5.
Not even close, especially if they're buying drugs.
Well, it's not just buying drugs. How about your groceries, for crying out?
Rent.
How about your
rent up? 8%, 10?
Well, and it's not. And by the way, part of that is property taxes and hull insurance, because the landlord has to pay the property taxes.
Yeah.
And he has to pay the hull insurance on the building. Now, you buy contents insurance as a renter, right? So you don't think it's up that much on the contents insurance, because it isn't. But the hull insurance has gone up double digits. And by the way, the property taxes are wildly up.
Sure they are.
All right? So, and this is something, I wrote an article on this the other day. When you look at those two things, if you look at a place where between the hull insurance, the homeowner's insurance and the property taxes, you got a $14,000 a year bill, all right? At today's interest rates, that's an imputed, on a 30-year run rate basis, that's an imputed $200,000 house.
Sure, without a doubt.
But here's the problem. The basic economic numbers say you'd need $70,000 in income to afford that, right? The problem is that assumes that some of what you put into the payment goes towards equity. And in this case, none of it does.
Carl,
there's
an article I have here somewhere, 2007 or 8, and I had a discussion with my significant other, Audrey, you know, regarding, it had to do with the housing price was about, at the time, $235,000. And if you gave somebody, if I said, here, Carl, I think you're a good guy, here's your 20% down, or if I'm your uncle or your dad or somebody, put the 20% down. You needed $85,000 with insurance and taxes to get that mortgage.
Right.
Problem is, 235 was the median number, meaning the middle on the houses.
Right.
Yet $85,000 was like the top 12 or 15% of wage earners in 2007.
Right.
So now, fast forward to 2024, the 235 is now 406 on the house. The taxes and insurance are higher. And I'm going to say, so they're up 70%. I don't see the average wage now. The $85,000 is now $150,000. I still think in the top 10 or 12% of people in the country make $150,000 or more.
Right.
I don't think. Plus, now the down payment would have to be $80,000, which is a big number.
Right.
I think we're way worse off.
We are.
Than we were in 2007, 2008.
We are, and this ultimately always always ends up going down the toilet one way or another, yet people seem to think that nothing bad is going to come.
Well, the difference is the wealth bubble, there's never been as much wealth. The person who rode the house up from 100 to 235 to 400, they're going to go buy another house at 415 and got to write a $10,000 check. It's no big deal. It's like Monopoly money. But this is what, I mean, I have a commercial on the...
Chief, it works until it doesn't.
Well, you know what, Carl? It's been so long, and I...
I know. Everybody thinks it'll never end.
We run over a minute, because I haven't said this in a while. It is exactly the same, only the mirror image of when I started in the business, when I was first started trading. I wasn't even in the business yet. In 1981 or 1980, even though the market was 800, the Dow, you couldn't get anybody to take 40 cents out of a bank earning 15% and put it in the market, even though
right. It
was very obvious to me that the only way for the either we're going under as a country or the market's going up, because these rates are going to come down, and the minute they do, the market's going to go up. Well, now we've got this situation where people, I talk to clients all the time, and just people in general, and I'm getting, you know, a lot of clients lately, Carl, that have concentration issues.
Right.
Because virtually no...
Big surprise.
But no, nobody at Merrill or any of those kinds of places, I'm not saying nobody, but nobody wants to tackle that. Nobody wants to try and do something with that. I mean, that's a specialized thing that only somebody who's been around options as long as I have and the people that work here could do something like that. So we're getting that sort of really high-end stuff. But if you can talk to somebody who's 80 years old that has this massive wealth bubble in their 401k IRA where they've just been along for 25 years, they see absolutely no fear whatsoever. And you know what's even weirder, Carl? Is say they've got $3 million. They've got so much more than they ever thought they would have that if you say, you know, what if the thing goes down 20%? Yeah, I still got 2.5. It's more than I ever thought I'd have. They're not even a bit worried about losing 20% of it. It's up so much.
Yeah.
It's like saying, like if you say to somebody who owns Apple, and they go, you say, well, geez, Apple, you know, its stock is at 229. What if it goes to 190? Hey, so what? I'm in it at $10. There is zero. There's no thought whatsoever that, like, Nvidia, and this is not a market, instead of going down from 134 to 120 and being back up again 6 months now, what if this thing goes to like 40 and never comes back? You can't. The thought never even crosses anybody's mind. Yet it did in 2000.
Chief, it's almost certain to happen at some point because this entire AI nonsense is driving this with the energy costs. If they can't, and they're doing it to themselves, but it's just the nature of technology. As I've tried to explain to people multiple times, if you cannot monetize what you sell, you know, whatever you buy in technology, before the next generation of stuff comes out, if you can't make enough money on what you bought to pay for it, with an operating margin before the next generation, the guy who waits and buys the next generation murders you.
Well,
because
yeah,
he now has something that is
you're
better,
never
going to
get anybody. We got to dash here. You're never going to get anybody to listen to you on that. It has to happen to them and say, "How did it happen?"
I'm just saying. Listen, I've really been doing this my entire professional life, and I've never seen it be different. Never in the technology space.
You know what is also eerie is 2000 and today. The stocks that got amazingly overvalued in 2000, I'll talk about 2000. I'm not going to say today because they might not be. In 2000 were the stocks that were the 49% of the Qs, and everybody bought the Qs. People didn't realize that when they put $100,000 in the Qs, they were paying $10,000 in Cisco.
Right.
And now, I mean, I know I put money in stuff for people all the time.
You put in the Qs and a huge amount of it goes into NVIDIA.
Without a doubt. So it's at a point where you look at the PEs of these things and you go, how'd they ever get that big? Because the people who buy them aren't even knowing they're buying it.
Right. That's just the way it works. But that's how the whole ETF thing works.
It works great, I think, until it gets kind of on a – it just becomes regular purchasing, which it is now. Hey, have a good weekend, buddy. Anything good planned?
Yep. Well, having all kinds of fun. Yeah, and chasing fall colors. So it's
good for you.
It'll be a good time.
Good for you. SP futures down 2, NASDAQ futures down 52. Again, PPI was not that big of a number, it doesn't appear. Same thing as yesterday, didn't really do that much. Now we're just going to wait for whatever. We wait for the next thing. Back tomorrow, back Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
the end of it. That's all, folks.